You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. Ed Stetzer here, talking to our old friend and former co-host of the podcast. We had some, I don't even remember, like every 100th episode, Daniel M. would bring us together and we'd have these parties. Sometimes we did it in person, sometimes we did it online, but we had some great fun. So Todd and I have been friends for a long time. We've worked together and I have great confidence in him as a leader. He's the director of Lifeway Leadership, at Lifeway Christian Resources. Prior to Lifeway, he was the executive pastor at McLean Bible Church. He's been, gosh, you could literally listen to him on hundreds of episodes of the New Churches podcast. So Todd, we're going to have a conversation, more of a conversation. I like to interview you because you got a lot of great things, but we're going to have a conversation about leadership development today. I get emails all the time. Maybe you do too. And someone says, I'm looking for I think I got one from Kelly Brady, a pastor friend of mine, looking for a staff member. And I said to him, I don't really know, but I think I said something back because I'm not really as aware of you people looking for a worship leader or right. A student pastor as I used to be. But what I said in the conversation, or maybe it was a different conversation, but anyway, is that right now, it's just hard to find people. There seem to be less people into staff roles, fewer leaders stepping into pastoral ministry or in general. Now, I don't know. We see that some in, you know, seminary enrollment, but not overwhelming. I still think there are students. But what was interesting was at my former church, High Point Church, is that we saw several people who love Jesus, who still even go to our church, who just didn't want to be pastors in that same role as well, because it became more challenging. So there just seems to be, my observation, you can't see, Todd and I can see each other. He's nodding. So Todd, tell us what you're seeing related to this.
I would say that is definitely true. And outside the pulpit, it's even more true. So meaning if you go back 30 years, you would see more people specializing in different areas of ministry and, you know, looking at having formal education and, you know, the whole nine. Whereas today, I think many seminaries, not all, but many seminaries have leaned more toward producing pastors, preachers these days, or at least that seems to be more of a focus. And so I think that's certainly part of it. Part of it is just population. I mean, if you look at, I'm an Xer and there's not as many of us around.
Let's back up that bus. It's not like the Generation X is dying off. I'm an Xer too, but there's not many of us. Cause why?
Because population.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, no one ever cares about
Gen X. There's a population trough.
Who cares about Gen X anyway? It's like, we're the ones that everyone forgets, but no, it's true. I mean, even young leaders right now there's a term that we use in, you know, university and colleges, is called the demographic cliff. So we're actually like 18-year-olds, like 18 years ago, people stopped having kids, or 16, 17. And it goes on for about 8 or 9 years. I don't remember exactly how long, but there's a dearth of young adults in university and colleges that colleges are facing. It's creating crisis in a lot of college settings. But also too, that has to do with what does it look like to raise up the next generation of pastors and leaders as well.
So let me ask you this, Ed. So I do the internship program at Lifeway. Before that, we had a future leaders program at McLean, pretty big. So, you know, you'd have 20, 30 leaders that had a year-long thing there. The one at Lifeway is just a summer thing. But I've been working with young leaders for a long, long time. And what's interesting to me is, at least anecdotally, the difference I see between like millennials and Z, because So millennials, like the youngest millennial is like 26. Is that right? 27?
I think so.
26, 27?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've had a number of them come through now where you can kind of see them. And so one of the things that's really interesting to me is that before now, I would generally say, and please don't, please send all letters to Ed. I would generally say that women who are leaders have typically been more competent than they are competent. Competent than they are confident. Sorry. And young male leaders were typically more confident than they were competent. What I see now is a generation that seems to maybe lack the confidence. I think they're just as competent, just as smart, just as bright, just as everything, but they need more encouragement. They need to be brought more along and encouraged to lead. So I don't know if that is something that you would agree with or see or not.
Well, I think I get very cautious around talking about gender specific, but I do think that like people who write on this thing would write on these topics, having read books by women leaders would echo some of what you said about competence and confidence. So, and with that shifting, I guess I just find in general that younger generations are starting in a very different place. Now, again, you and I are both Gen Xers, but I'm an older Gen Xer. You're a little younger on that scale. But I think that where I stepped into that ministry is, I planted my first church at 21. I was just sort of on this trajectory, and there was just a sense that I could. And I'm not sure there's a sense among a lot of Gen Z that they even can. And then sometimes when they do, there's an uncertainty of what it means to, we all hear this, but what does it mean to build my leadership skill and cachet and role over time? That's a different perception as well. I've got kind of an interesting thing. And again, it's one of the reminders that a generation is not one thing. If you would have listened to the early Gen X conversation, the book, Gen X, Doug Copeland's book, it was kind of slackers. I mean, the movie was Reality Bites, with a bunch of slackers with a Nona Ryder.
A great soundtrack.
It was a great soundtrack, but that didn't turn out to be. So you find a mix. And so part of it is, I think there's not, for some Gen Z, there's not a sense of I sort of knew how to develop as a leader in my 20s. And I had a path to do that. I followed. I mean, I didn't follow, I didn't go to seminary. I moved to the inner city of Buffalo, New York, and planted a church among the urban poor. But I sort of knew I was going to grow as a leader. I did my academic work as I went. Whereas now I think it's more nebulous and less clear. But maybe I'm seeing it differently.
No, I would definitely say that you're seeing people find their own path to that. And
it's like 10 paths rather than two. Yeah.
Yes. I wouldn't say rejecting. They would just say, hey, the traditional path is just as valid as this other path.
That's interesting. I could see that. But I do think there is something of a skepticism towards leader and leadership. And, sometimes I think in the church, the rise and fall of Mars Hill was, one of the most listened to podcasts in the entire world. And now I think people like asking more questions, sometimes rightly, sometimes maybe reading things that wouldn't be read rightly. I mean, it's one of the challenges that people are more aware, but they're also more suspicious. But I don't think it's just that. I mean, that's impacted church culture, but I just think in general, if you go into any company that's hiring people, they're just seeing that there's a sense that people are skeptical of leadership, but even more so with church leadership, with next generation.
Yeah, I think that's do you think it comes from deconstructive culture? Not just deconstructionism when we're talking about the faith, but a deconstructive culture.
I think so. I think to be fair, there's been a lot of church bad news about church leaders, right? We can think of, Rabbi Zacharias. We think of the Bill Hybels thing. We typically in these kind of podcasts, you don't name names so much, but I already mentioned Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, but the challenge with something like the Hybels things, these were like leadership experts too. Gurus. So there becomes a distrust of leadership when leadership experts are also those that now make the global the global headlines. So I think there's, I mean, I just, you know, I have three daughters who are all young adults. So from 18, 21, 24. And just, you know, just as we're recording this, my oldest daughter's texting me about things that she heard at church when she was younger, that now she's like, you know, that was really toxic. And I'm like, you know, thankfully it wasn't something I said in church when she was younger. And it's not, actually, I agree with her. I mean, what we're texting about is kind of a toxic idea that, you know, some she picked up along the way and says, you know, we don't think this, right? No, we don't think this. I don't think this. So I think people are, that younger generations are examining at a higher level. And some of that is deconstruction culture, but they're just not receiving passed on from the prior generation in a way that I think even, you know, Gen X, we were supposed to be so different than the boomers before us, but we received a lot of that. And I think they're questioning that more so.
Yeah. I definitely think that I see that with a new generation as well. I mean, if I go back to the previous episode we recorded, I do think it is about, it comes down to relationship. Like if you're not willing to invest individually or find, they want somebody to invest individually in them and they're skeptical until you basically prove that you are who you say you are over the course of time. So I think patience is a big part of that because we may want, earlier generations may want people to have to go through what we went through to get to where we are, or the expectations of we can't, you know, well, you can't think that way, or I don't know, just not patient enough for them to work through even some theology issues that are there to help them mature and understand what they are.
Yeah. And I think too, it, part of the reality too, is it does relate to the local church. I mean, for me, the assumption was, that the local church would be just normal. I mean, I was a church planner, so maybe that's part of it. And our audience is church planners, but I think we are finding next generation slower to commit to a local congregation. And I think part of that is the negative perception of, you know, scandals in churches, struggles in churches. But I think too, you know, we are also dealing with a generation that engages digitally in a different way. You know, I first heard from Leonard Sweet, the idea of digital natives versus, you know, people like me who, you know, I learned to use my first computer, I think in the eighth or ninth grade, whereas kids today just grow up with social media.
Yeah.
So what do you see and how do you see, we can help younger generations engage in church life? Cause these church planners are asking, how do I help those 18-year-olds get plugged in and engaged?
I think that it is embracing their skepticism. It is asking them to come alongside you and do something. There is a causal nature about them. They care more about what you say and do than what you say. If they just hear you say something, they're going to want to make sure that you back that up. The best way to do that is to have them participate in whatever it is you're doing. If I was setting up, that's the way I would go.
Yeah. I would say too, agreed on all of those things. I would also point out that as the percentage of people who are Christian is declining in our culture, those who are tending to be more serious. So one of the things actually we find statistically is though you know, get to younger generations, they're more likely to identify as nuns, they're more likely to not identify as Christian. But those who do, you know, if you're 60 years old, identifying as a Christian is not that big of a deal. Most of your peers do. But if you're 18 years old, that's a bigger deal. And it does seem to be leading to a greater sense of seriousness. Statistically, we can see a greater sense of devout practice. So I think that too is an opportunity, but they often don't see the church as a healthy place to exercise their spiritual growth. And they definitely, well, not definitely too strong, but they often, very often, don't see the church as a place to grow and develop as a leader. So I think that's important for us to seize that opportunity. You've already talked about doing that in a relational context, but to also, with authenticity, in community, to challenge people. I mean, Ephesians 3:10 says God has chosen the church to make known his manifold wisdom. We need next generations to inherit the church with all her flaws and all her brokenness and to take that path forward, as the church is a central part of their spiritual lives as well.
So, okay, you have three daughters.
I do.
Of the age range that we're talking about here, what would you say we can learn from their generation? Like, what can we learn from them to apply in our churches?
Yeah, it's a good question. And of course, you know, as the father of three daughters, who they are not always, you know, I get permission before I talk about them specifically on something, but their generation, I can definitely talk about. The other thing, what's fascinating too, is that my oldest daughter grew up before social media, and my younger daughter, middle daughter, just didn't get into social media. My youngest daughter grew up in social media. You can actually see, I mean, social media has a substantive impact. And I think one of the things we can learn is what it means to be a connected generation. And again, I'm pretty social media savvy. But what does it mean to be a connected generation who really, there's a flat world that they're living in, where you know, relationships they're not hierarchical, like maybe the boomers in particular. So I think we can learn what it means to be in that kind of authentic community where you're much more transparent. I would say much more transparent than, and I think in a good way. You know, I just saw a minute ago, a pastor, tweet about seeing his counselor. And I think, you know, those kinds of things, and I'm guessing he's an Xer like us, those kind of things are kind of unusual to hear from a pastor as a Gen Xer, but it's not unusual at all to hear from a 19-year-old to talk about, you know, I struggle with this. I, you know, walk through this. And I think that clarity of transparency is something we can learn. You know, this Sunday I preached at my church, and I was talking about doubt. And I actually said, you know, there's times I've doubted in hard times, I doubt the goodness of God, but there are times, and maybe in hard times, I've just doubted my Christian faith. And I think saying that was like, for people, like, so wait a second, that's okay? It's like, well, I think so, because faith, yeah. I mean, faith is ultimately believing something contrary to doubt. And if there's never a doubt, I don't have to have any faith. And I don't have this complete certainty. I have a confidence, but I don't have this complete certainty. So sharing those things, I think, ministers to a lot of people. It can be a little jarring to older people, but it's not jarring to that 18-year-old. It's freeing for her or for him. What would you add?
I mean, I would go back to what we were talking about earlier with just being patient with that person. Yeah. Because we're coming from a completely different generation. We're coming from a completely different perspective, and understanding that they're not going to take the same path we did. And the expectations that they feel are different as well. And so, I mean, you know, when I look at things outside, you know, church that we can kind of learn from, and you hear things like, oh, well, you know, this study says they care more about issues than brands, and that's why you're seeing all these brands bring in issues.
Yeah.
And you know, we should be thinking about that as well. So I just think, again, it's coming back and personalizing that and understanding that they have grown up. Like, what if I look back on my life, I could say, you know, at this point in time, I had this many channels on my TV. We didn't have cable. I didn't have cable until I got to college or whatever. But okay.
So can I just point out that I hope you don't have cable now? But that's another story for another day.
No, okay, no, no.
You've unplugged. All right, good.
Yes. I don't even watch TV because I'm that boring.
You're that godly. You're that godly. But anyway, go ahead.
So we went through a phase where, you know, it's like content was king, and then contextual content was king. And now you're growing up with a generation that says this is literally an extension. This device or this media is almost an extension of me. And now they're expecting conditional content.
Huh.
And what I'm saying is that's how personal we need to get. We need to be personal and patient with them and really bring them along and making sure that, that we're taking them somewhere, because if we're not taking them anywhere, they're not just going to show up anymore.
And so that journey really is a key thing. And to come back to again and again, that we want to be on a journey with people as well, learning from, sharing with. I think those are key realities for us. We had, as always, a fascinating conversation with Todd Atkins. He's the director of leadership at Lifeway. And again, friend of the podcast, former co-host of the podcast, and always exciting to have him on the podcast again. Thanks for coming to the conversation, Todd.
Thank you, Ed.
And thanks for listening to the New Churches Podcast. We're out.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.